Tonight, we are taking a look at a story that says a lot about the modern media landscape and how the next generation is getting its news. A former CIA officer, once known mainly in political and intelligence circles, has suddenly become a viral figure online. His name is John Kiriakou. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and this is America First. You may remember him as the intelligence officer who publicly confirmed the CIA's waterboarding program and later became a whistleblower who served prison time after revealing classified information. Now, for years, Kiriakou was a controversial figure in Washington, praised by some as a whistleblower, criticized by others for exposing national security secrets. But now, he's gaining a new audience, millions of young viewers on social media platforms. Now, clips of his interviews, podcast appearances, and commentary are spreading rapidly online, particularly among younger audiences who are increasingly skeptical of traditional media and government institutions. So the question isn't just who is John Kiriakou. The bigger question is, why are young Americans suddenly paying attention to voices like his? And what does this tell us about how the next generation consumes news, politics, and information? If you want to understand the future of media, you need to understand one thing. The gatekeepers are gone. For decades, Americans largely got their news from a handful of major television networks and newspapers. Editors decided what stories actually mattered. Producers decided who got airtime. And the public received the news through a very controlled pipeline. But that world doesn't exist anymore. Today, a 20-year-old can learn about world events from a podcast, a YouTube interview, a TikTok clip, or a long-form discussion that might last 3 hours. And in many cases, those platforms allow conversations that traditional television simply will not. That's where someone like John Kiriakou enters the picture. Now, he's not appearing on mainstream nightly news shows every week, but he is appearing on podcasts and digital programs that young people trust. Those audiences are drawn to these long conversations, insider perspectives, and voices that challenge official narratives. So whether you agree with Kiriakou or not, the fact that he has gone viral tells us something very important. Young Americans are seeking information beyond the traditional media system, and the political establishment is still trying to catch up. We're going to explore why that shift is happening and what it means for the future of journalism, politics, and most importantly, public trust. So joining me now is John Kiriakou himself and two voices who represent this next generation, the digital generation. John Swan, a political commentator and a digital media analyst, has been studying how online platforms are reshaping political conversation. And Alexandria Hughes, a young political voice who has been watching firsthand how younger audiences consume news and form opinions. And of course, John Kiriakou himself. John, I just have to ask, what is going on? How is this blowing us? Tell us about all the exciting things that have been going on now that you are known as the CIA whistleblower.
It happened quite literally overnight, which is funny to me because I've been largely telling the same stories for almost 19 years now. I will say what makes me happiest about this is that I've been utterly consistent, and I think young people, Gen Zers, recognize that all these years I've been telling the truth.
Are you as cool as they make you out to be in all of these clips? Do your kids think you're that cool?
No.
Okay, well, let me actually go to someone who actually thinks of both of you. John Swan, when did you first hear, besides growing up and knowing John Kiriakou your entire life, but when did you hear about him online, and what do you make of this phenomenon of people that have blown John Kiriakou's name up and made it a household name among your generation?
I would say I definitely first heard about John probably start of February. That's really when he started to blow up, kind of seeing other people, other friends talking about, hey, you know, have you seen this guy? Have you heard this story? Just kind of all the crazy things that we were hearing was hilarious to all of us. We can't take many things seriously in Gen Z, so hearing about a torture program but redesigned and repackaged in a funnier way is how we kind of communicate information. But it's pretty crazy because if you know John Kiriakou actually has blown up in those 3 months of the start of this year. He actually has about over 12.3 million views in just 8 combined accounts that are fan accounts of John. So in a very short amount of time, he went from kind of just known as a whistleblower to mainstream media as CIA John.
He became a household name, which I know that you just shake your head at that, because like you said, you've been saying this for years, but you've been saying it in front of government officials. You've been saying it in front of the 40, 50, 60-year-old crowd.
Yes.
This is the crowd that's actually making your message resonate. What does that say to you?
It says to me that things are changing. And I'll give you a specific example. A year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, I did a series of 15 speeches all around the UK. And my audiences were 80-20 men, but they were largely between 50 and 80 years old. Now, my demographic is still 80-20 men, but it's evenly split from 15 to 80.
And you talk about men, but women are also resonating. Younger generation of women are finally taking up politics. Alexandrine, I think the fascinating part of the story is Kiriakou has been talking publicly for years. His interviews are being clipped, shared, watched by millions of young viewers. Why do you think his messaging, his credibility as an insider is actually resonating with people your age?
I think my generation is just tired of all the fluff and the restrictions that we've always had, and so to have somebody come on here with firsthand experience and just raw emotions, it's something new, and so we're so interested and intrigued in it that we want more of it. Like, my generation is, I mean, we're growing up, we're coming to adulthood now, like, we don't know who to trust, what to trust, and so having somebody with firsthand experience and everything he does is fact-checked and it's true, so it's something that we can all trust.
Does it make a difference that people your age are the ones that are spreading that this is organic? It's not coming from older mainstream media sources that are changing. It's people your age who are saying, no, this is actually true. I fact-checked him. Is that actually building to his credibility, do you feel like?
I think it is, because if the younger generation's behind you, you can go so far.
And you are going far, because there are lots of deals that have come your way. Just to a certain extent, tell me a little bit about what this last week has been and how surprised you are. Are you learning a little bit about marketing in today's age and the cost of it?
I am. It's the craziest thing, Scotty. I happened by sheer chance to wear Tom Ford eyeglasses. I just happened to like them the day that I was at the optometrist's office 3.5 years ago. And now the Tom Ford company has reached out.
Huge
Am
brand.
I interested in being a brand ambassador? There was a certain pill in the shade of blue where they asked if I was interested. I declined that. It was very nice of them to ask. But it's a ton of different things. I got an email today asking if I would be on the board of a company that makes drones designed to fight forest fires.
You've
just
never seen that
taken
before.
On a life of its
but
own.
But does this also change your, does this also show what your generation, and I'm going to ask you this, John, mm-hmm. how much your generation is not only trusting getting their news from online sources, but they're also getting the influences on their lifestyle as well, what brands they're choosing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would say it's the funniest thing and the easiest way to reach Gen Z is by giving them a familiar face. So for John, I think the funniest part about all of it is that he doesn't come off and appearing as like a super dangerous guy. So when you just sit down, you have a nice conversation, you talk very nice, but then you say, yeah, this is how we used to torture people in the CIA. It just hits everyone like, wait, what is he talking about? So instead, when you start to advertise those products, then they're gonna say, oh, it's a CIA guy. Oh, I know this. And it's hopefully, you know, in the marketing mind, it's gonna help to shift people to buy the product because, you know, CIA John's wears Tom Ford glasses, so you should have some too.
And you said that, you know, Alexander, you said to me earlier, he says he's just so good at storytelling. Is it because the stories are true and the way he perceives it? I mean, was this a surprise to you that all this was going on in the government?
Honestly, no, because I also grew up with politics at my dinner table. I've always known.
But it was a conspiracy theory.
It's always been the conspiracy.
This is now confirming it.
Well, he confirmed the conspiracy, so I mean, of course, I mean.
Oh, that's heavy. So then what do you say, John, when the next generation looks at you and goes, you're a source now? You're now what people are referencing in their papers that they're writing in school. They're quoting you to their high school teachers. Does that give you sort of a legacy?
You know, that's really, I think, one of the most important aspects of this for me. I have a friend with whom I teach a class at a university in Spain, the history of terrorism in the graduate school there. And he asked me about an academic website, and have I checked it out? Because this is like the go-to academic website for citations. I said I'd never heard of it. So he signed me up, and I looked. He's been a PhD for more than 40 years, and I have more academic sources than he does. It floored me.
Which shows the power of the internet, which is what you've been looking at.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think this is planting the seed with this next generation to be more investigative? And are there resources out there for folks who want to do it themselves instead of just trusting what is spoon-fed to them in the media?
100%. And I think that specifically Gen Z has a really hard time on, we got a short attention span. So already sitting down to watch the news is pretty difficult for us. Let's just be honest about it. However, it's also harder because now that we're getting older, we see so many different sides to one story that it becomes overwhelming. So for us, instead of saying, okay, this news says this, this organization says that, my friend said this because he heard it from somebody else, it gets all confusing, it gets hard. So instead, we are more likely to not only see someone like John and say, wow, that's interesting, instead of just believing it firsthand from TikTok, people are more likely, and Gen Z is more likely, to actually turn and research those topics that he's talking about because it sparks our interest. And that's the first step and the first seed that we have to Gen Z actually having their own investigative skills and their own knowledge building skills instead of just trusting whatever they're told.
It's interesting, you said planting the seed, which I've said all along why this is important, especially for our generation to their generation, planting the seed. Do you think this is going to affect your generation? This sort of, when it comes to researching candidates and where they stand on issues, both domestic and foreign policy, when they go to the polls, you're about to turn, you're turning 18. You're going to be voting for your first election. You've probably already voted in one, but this is the first one. Is this going to have an effect, do you feel like, on your generation for voting?
Oh my gosh, of course it is. I mean, fact checking is so important now because we aren't just looking at their political beliefs. We're looking at the person behind the political beliefs. Because they can be a great candidate and everything, but if their like background's not good, we're not going to vote for them because we care more about the character of our leaders, not just what they're saying. Because it's not about what you say, it's about what you do. And we want someone who lives the lifestyle that they preach.
And that is something that you've been uncovering, as you've been showing that a lot of stuff that we've been fed in the public eye is actually not what's been happening, the truth behind the scenes. John Cariaco, another big shift I want to talk about is this platform, just real quick before we get out. Younger audiences are watching podcasts, their independent media shows, platforms, long-form conversations rather than the news. What do you think the viral spread of voices like yours say and the message you want for this next generation?
There's a search for the truth. If there's one thing that I'm the most proud of in my adult life, it's that I've consistently told the truth. And young people recognize the truth. This is how we save our political system, by being honest. And I'm proud to have played a role in that.
You know, I still laugh at these politicians today who get up there who think they can say one thing when we have them on videotapes, on news interviews, just 2, 3, 5 years ago, saying the exact opposite, doing the exact opposite. They forget that they do record things. And that's where you said the truth actually is going to be more important now going forward, because guess what? They can prove whether or not you're lying, and they dismiss you if you are. I want you to stay right here, all of you, because when we come back, we are going to let the Generation Zers see, John. They're going to actually ask you some questions. I hope you're ready.
I'm ready.
They're pretty tough. Right when we come back. Welcome back. We're going to bring the conversation directly to the next generation. John Swan, Lexi Hughes is here, and they're going to actually ask John Cariaco, without any filtered himself, questions about what is going on today, and more importantly, questions that their generation wants to know that might not have been asked yet. So thank you so much for joining me. We have Alexandria Lynn, John Swan, and John Cariaco. So let me start with you, John Swan. I know you've been looking forward to this. What's some things that you feel like has not been touched on with Mr. Cariaco yet?
I'll start us off with probably the most recent development in the story. John, you've been elected by Gen Z to start running for president. So how are we feeling? You know, what, are we getting the campaign ready? What are we doing?
I just learned of this like a minute ago. you know, when I was a little kid, like second grade little kid, I told my parents I wanted to be president. I had just learned to read.
Nice.
But I learned the presidential oath of office. Mm. I memorized it.
Do you still have it? Can you still quote it?
I, John Cariaco, solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
He's elected.
I think that's good enough.
Okay,
you know, somebody put in the chat on my own podcast, you should run for president with Tucker Carlson, they said. Mm. And the next time I ran into Tucker, I said, hey, people have been saying in my chat, that we should run for president and vice president, Carlson Kiriakou, And he said, people in my chat are saying that we should run for president and vice president. And I said, I'm all in if you want to run. I was joking. But I don't know.
Except we have one problem with that. You still are a convicted felon.
I'm a convicted felon.
Yes. Alexandria, your question.
Well, I think with Trump, that's not really an issue.
Right.
So a convicted fellow can be president. But so have you asked for a pardon yet?
Yeah.
Where do we stand on this?
I've actually asked three times. I asked Barack Obama. I was essentially laughed at. I asked Joe Biden. I was ignored. And I've asked Donald Trump. And I have a lot of support from inside the Trump administration. I've spoken with people who have direct, regular contact with the president. And they've been incredibly supportive. But as one said to me, it may happen in 6 hours or 6 months or never. Maybe he doesn't like your face or the tie that you're wearing, or you said something that made him mad. All I can do is be patient and hope for the best.
Well, I hope the recent fame helps you get your pardon.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
I mean, he does like celebrities on that side of it. You know, I think that's interesting that you would even point that out, because you are so humble in that approach to it, the way that you're approaching this bumble. But it's not just the jail time, because everybody knows, this is the message that I want young people, not only to plant the seed, but more importantly, the persecution, both personally, professionally, your family has taken for saying the right things. People need to understand there are consequences for standing up for the truth, and it happens every day. What are some of those consequences to you, and would you do it all again after what you've gone through?
I'll answer your second question first. Absolutely yes. Without one second of having to think about it, I would do it again today if it needed to be done. Yes, that's an easy one. The consequences are significant. I lost literally everything. I lost my pension. I lost my freedom. My wife left me. I lost my house. You know what I ended up doing? I ended up buying a relatively nice car. And I told my sister, if I end up homeless, at least I'll have a decent car to sleep in. I actually said that.
No.
So the cost was incredibly high, but not high enough that it would deter me from doing it again. You know, we all know in our guts what's right and what's wrong. And you have to do what's right. That's an easy decision. I want to be able to look myself in the mirror. I want my children to be proud of me. And so the decision was an easy one to make.
Well, I hope they are. John, we can get a little bit specific. If you're watching the show, you're probably familiar with a lot of the clips that have gone viral at this point. What are some of the questions that you have?
Let's start off with an easier one. What was the worst part about prison for you?
This is probably going to surprise you, but the worst part was that it was like Groundhog Day. It was every day being exactly the same as every other day. I was initially worried that, you know, I would be maybe in danger, but I was never in danger. It's a little bit of a long story, but
you were never in danger in prison, because you hear how horrible prison is and how mean it is in there, and you have to survive.
I ended up running the prison. is what it was. No, I thought I was going to be in a minimum security work camp. Mm-hmm. The CIA went behind my back. They were so furious that my sentence was so short that they had me transferred to a low security prison with a concertina wire and the double fences and all that stuff. And I told myself my first day, take it easy. There's nothing you can do. You've lived in way worse places than this. And so I started to use my CIA training to keep myself safe. And the first thing I did was to make strategic alliances. And that meant with the Italians and the Aryans and the Mexican mafia and the Norteños and the Borrachos and the Crips and the Bloods. And I just made sure that I was respected by all of them.
So you're friends with the Bloods?
Yeah.
You got
with a guy with MS-13 tattooed all the way across his neck. No problem.
I'm getting high fives
from him every time we passed each other in the hall.
So you're pretty popular in prison.
Yeah, that worked out well.
It seems like it. I got to ask you, are you trained, and are you able to tell me what martial arts you're specifically trained in?
You know, the martial arts training came after I went through the operational training. So I got everything else. I got all the different weapons. I got defensive driving, counter-terrorist driving, bomb making, diffusing bombs, all these different operational things. And then I went out to the field and then they introduced martial arts. So I didn't get it. It came after me.
Yeah.
So you can't karate chop anyone?
No. Okay. I can punch him in the throat.
Okay.
But that's about it.
Okay, probably more the side of it. Alexandria?
So how young does the CIA go when they're recruiting agents? Like, have they ever used teenagers before or, like, young adults?
No. When I joined the CIA, it was very, very common to run into a 21 or 22-year-old in the halls. That was easy. After 9/11, let me add, when I joined the CIA, there were about 200 applicants for every one opening. Post 9/11, it ballooned to 2,500 applicants for every one opening. And so they could be more selective. So instead of hiring people with bachelor's degrees that they could then put through graduate school, they hired people who already had master's degrees or PhDs or law degrees or whatever. So now it's a slightly older crowd. I will say one British, like senior level British intelligence officer told me one time that every time he would go to the CIA, he would be amazed at how young everybody was and how smart everybody was.
So do other intelligence agencies around the world bring in young people as assets?
Not as young as as we do.
Is that only in the movies?
Yeah, it's just in the movies.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to control somebody who's, you know, still a teenager, let's say, because their brains aren't fully developed, and you can't really rely on their decision-making abilities under pressure.
Unless they're watching your show, that you can rely on your popularity with them. That's
smooth
truthful.
As silk. That's the way to do it.
John?
So we had mentioned earlier, obviously, about the martial arts and things like that, but from where we're standing right now, let's say I was, you know, the worst person in the world. In seconds, how long do you think it could take for you to, like, immobilize me?
Yeah, 7 or 8 seconds.
I'm going
to
step back
now.
Good to know.
All right. I was afraid, you know, you said, like, this in prison, so I got a little bit nervous already, so we'll be okay.
Well,
we got
you know,
there a good amount of distance.
There was a rule that we were taught at the CIA. We were taught a lot of rules. Okay. And some of them were kind of tongue-in-cheek, like admit nothing, deny everything, make counter-accusations.
Okay.
But then there were some serious ones, like let others do your dirty work.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And you have to be more psychologically manipulative.
So if I was going to get attacked, it wouldn't be from you. So
come
behind me and just...
No,
you know.
I would convince one of the ladies to do it
for
me.
Yeah, even better. I like
and
that.
I would get them to think that it was their idea.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Nice. So, Scotty,
don't listen to the voices,
please.
I'd be more worried about the one on your left on that side. That's the thing. So how much psychological training do you go into this? Is it
a great deal.
More than you would say physical training? The CIA officers go into?
Physical? Yeah, it's probably more than physical training. I actually expected more physical training and didn't get it. There's a great deal of psychology that's involved in just the simple act of recruiting a spy to steal a secret. Sometimes you have to go a lot deeper than that because you have to manipulate people. You have to use them. You have to prey on their weaknesses. One of these viral videos that I never meant to be funny was... I was instructed to recruit an Arab diplomat. And so I pretended to accidentally bump into him at a coffee shop. I had done surveillance on him for a week, and I knew he went for coffee every morning in this one coffee shop. So I went, and I was like, hey, how are you? I know you. You're from the foreign ministry. I'm from the American embassy. And I wrote back to headquarters. I said, he's gay. I'm 100% sure he's gay. And then headquarters came back and said, we want you to pretend that you're gay and date him. And then recruit him. And I let my guard down for 1 second. I just wasn't thinking in character. And he leaned in to kiss me. And instinctively, I backed away. And then he said, oh my God, I'm sorry, I thought you were gay. And I remembered my cover. And I said, oh no, I am gay. It's just that I'm not into hairy guys. And he's like, oh. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I led you on. I like guys with no hair on their chests.
Did it work?
And I'm thinking, you idiot. It actually worked.
You were able to still keep your cover with him.
I kept my cover, and I recruited him.
Did he shave the hair when he got recruited?
He was like a bear. He couldn't possibly have shaven all that hair.
Do any of these people come back to you now, especially with your viral, and go... I knew it. I knew all along you were in the CIA. Now that your face is now plastered across the world, are they now?
Not any of the sources, but I will say a year ago I was in Athens and I was just walking down the street and this car is beeping, beeping, beeping. And finally I turn around and I said, what? And the guy says, John, it's George from the Greek intelligence service. And I was like, oh my God, George, I haven't seen you in 25 years. He gets out of his car and he hugged me and he whispered, the boys are really proud of what you did.
Alexandria?
So my question is, there's been like rumors about the CIA having a meme department where they push out memes on like Instagram Reels or TikTok and like all the different social medias. Is this true?
I would say probably, yeah. I left the CIA more than 20 years ago and the world has completely changed, but I would say that that has to be true. The CIA has always been proud to be at the cutting edge of technology and of societal trends. This would make sense to me.
Well, it makes sense having you on today. I appreciate being, I'm honored to be your coworker, John Kiriakou.
Pleasure's
and thank
mine.
You so much for joining us and giving us an interview. Thank you, John Swan, Alexandria Hughes, for also joining us with your questions. Stories like John Kiriakou's highlight something bigger than just one individual. They highlight a transformation in how information moves. The next generation doesn't wait for the evening news. They search, they question, they listen to long conversations instead of short sound bites. And whether political leaders like it or not, the monopoly on information is over. That doesn't mean every voice online is correct, but it does mean the American public now has access to perspectives that once never made it past the newsroom door. The challenge for this generation will be separating truth from noise, because information has never been more available, but credibility has never been more contested. My thanks to John Swan and Alexandria Hughes and John Kiriakou for joining us tonight. And don't forget to watch John on his brand new show, The Deep State. Thank you for watching. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and this has been America First.